All right, this is Jack Posobiec. You are listening to the Human Events Conversation. So what we're doing with these is, while we're in between the holidays, I wanted to sit down and record a couple of one-on-one interviews with people. So just sit down, take some time, you know, get to know some folks that you may hear us talking about, but really step back from the day-to-day of everything and go a little bit deeper. So I know one thing you always hear me say at the end of every Human Events, I say, take it away, John. But who is John? Who is this mysterious John? Why is he taking it away and where is he taking it? So I've invited him on to explain himself.
Well, thanks for having me, but I feel like the mystery just makes me feel like a superhero.
No, we'll leave some
bit.
Of the mystery. Don't worry. We'll leave some of the mystery. Yeah, some of it. Your mystique will pervade. Yeah, we'll keep you somewhat shrouded in mystery. But yeah, so for folks who don't know, John Root, he's a host of Breakaway, which is the sports themed podcast on Turning Point Live, and he also hosts Turning Point Live on the Couch every day. So dual hatted in terms of that. Plus he does a lot behind the scenes that I don't think that people realize. But you, and I just recently found this out, have a totally different background than necessarily, I mean, kind of like myself in a way, like I'm a prior, you know, Navy intelligence guy, Navy intel guy before I got into this. But tell people what your background is.
So my background's in sports media. So when it comes to Breakaway, that's something I've been used to.
That's your bread and butter.
Yeah, that is my bread and butter. I've loved sports. I played sports. I played at Azusa Pacific University in Southern California. That's D2 football. So I wasn't big time at all, but I've been around sports my whole life. And then ever since I was a kid, I remember watching Dream Job. It was an ESPN show where they'd have contestants on to try to get an anchor job with ESPN before they were woke. And for a long time, I wanted to get a job like that. And
it always seemed to me that like ESPN was kind of the like ahead of the curve with a lot of the woke stuff.
Yeah.
Was that just me or were you kind of seeing that as well?
Well, I was seeing that too, but when they had a regime change, basically, they had someone come in that had connections with leftist politics and leftist politicians, that it shouldn't be a shocker to anybody. And then especially too, when you see streaming services and everything find their way in, there's highlights on social media where ESPN had to make a shift and then they dove headfirst into leftist policies. But for me, I worked in sports my whole life. I studied communications and journalism in college. Journalism integrity is something that I always hold dear and something I don't see a lot. So for me, that's something I always want to put that in my content. But I worked for a minor league baseball team as a host. And then I moved to the San Francisco Bay Area and I worked for the San Jose Sharks. I was a host and reporter for them for about 5 seasons. I worked for the Golden State Warriors organization. I worked for NBC Sports Bay Area in California. So I was involved in that sports scene.
So you're kind of like working your way up through the Bay Area sports scene.
Yeah, for me. And then I was born in the Bay Area too. So getting to work in the Bay Area was a dream come true for me. I watched the Sharks when I was a kid. And then now I'm able to entertain thousands of fans online and in the arena. It was a dream to me. But I saw politics not only seeping, but flooding into sports.
Wow.
So I had a little bit of awakening, and I started listening to Charlie. I listened to Ben Shapiro. I listened to some of the biggest political commentators because
you got a sense that something was a little off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I was seeing this big push, especially when you're living in the San Francisco Bay Area, like pride is everywhere. Everything's rainbow.
San Francisco is like the,
it's the gay capital of the world.
The capital, yeah, it's the capital.
And I've
pride
seen
capital, definitely.
It's the crack capital too. I mean, I could go off on stories about seeing people shooting up and crap.
All right, well, hold on. I want to get into that yet because I do want to ask you about that. But
that's a little teaser for everybody.
We need the story of John first.
But for me, I was.
So you're doing all that, and yet now you're here in Phoenix, Arizona, doing Turning Point. So what happened there?
So for me, I just started diving into politics. Probably around 2014 is when I was really following politics. And then especially that election with Hillary and Trump, I was like, I need to understand what's going on here, because every single sports outlet is diving into politics. It seems like every single league and team has something to say about what's going on here. And it seems like it's definitely a pun. It was a turning point. And that was my turning point, where I have to really understand. I understood my faith. I went to a Christian school. I've been a Christian my whole life, and I can go off about theology and talk about that forever. And I was always very outspoken about my faith, but politics, I need to be able to explain my politics. That's something we talk about at Turning Point USA all the time. These kids come up to us and they're like, well, I need resources to understand, you know, how do I talk about COVID? How do I talk about these politicians, these bills, what's going on in my city?
Yeah,
and for me, I started diving headfirst into that, because politics and sports, they intertwined. So for me, I was just as well versed in politics by 2016 as I was in sports.
Which I always thought was weird for me, because when you look at, you know, any contest in sports, right, it's, you would think that it's actually the most conservative thing that we still have in America, right? Because there is a point system. There is a rule system. I mean, obviously, you know, in every, of course, we argue over the application of those rules from game to game or from official to official. And of course, that's a big part of it. But, you know, it is basically, it is a meritocracy. Can
the greatest meritocracy
100%. Put points on the board? Can you win the game, whether it's, you know, catching a ball or running a ball or running as fast as possible or, you know, whatever that is? There's no system at the end where they say, oh, this team got too many points, so we're going to redistribute those points over because of more equity. That, I mean, that would fly in the face of the entire purpose of sports to begin with. So it always struck me as so strange that they would go for sports first, but then it, again, at the same time, they kind of had to, right? Because sports is just inherently a meritocracy. It is based on, you know, sink or swim. Like, can you make it or not?
The best player gets the job.
Yeah,
how many,
boom.
How many white cornerbacks have you seen in the NFL over the past two decades?
Yeah.
One.
Yeah.
One. And that was over the last year.
Right.
So anytime people are saying, like, oh, I want sports to look like America and the diversity of America, honestly, you don't want more white guys in the secondary in the NFL. And a lot of people start pushing all this whole equity and
the other thing is
that it doesn't make sense.
One thing I've always said, and I'm, you know, I'm from the Philadelphia area, so Eagles culture is everywhere. It's
Vince
pervasive.
Papalia, I mean,
yeah,
Vince,
all of it. No, I've met Vince actually a couple times. And I've never once heard anyone in Philadelphia say, oh, I disapprove of the demographics of this team, and we need to have more of this and less of that. And it's like, no, you talk about players and you say, oh, you know, McNabb marched us to the Super Bowl, but he couldn't make it. And Andy was up here and Reed should have done this and his clock management and all, right? Like, that's,
well, Rush Limbaugh got
what you would
lambasted
talk about.
For
yes.
that when he was working
yeah,
at ESPN. And,
right,
and
right.
You had,
they threw
all,
him off.
He had all the other guys
over that, McNabb. Yeah.
Yeah. They were agreeing with him, and there was almost a sense of, and I want to be careful with my words.
Well, what Rush pointed out was that you are trying to push a PC narrative because you want a certain outcome, but I'm looking at the statistics and I'm just not seeing what you're saying.
And people were actually rooting for Donovan McNabb because they wanted to see a black quarterback succeed. I wanted to see it because there's
believe me, as an Eagles fan, I wanted him to succeed.
Of course.
Yeah, right.
And
obviously.
And that's sports, because you just want people to succeed no matter what color they are. And obviously, there's certain people we don't want to succeed now because you have people like LeBron. I want to see him fail.
Yeah, no, I'm good with that. LeBron crash and burn.
But when it comes to seeing people at face value,
you,
it doesn't matter.
LeBron, to me, it's the people always, this is the big debate, MJ versus LeBron. As simple as this, LeBron is not a champion. He doesn't act like a champion. He doesn't act like a leader. He's not somebody who you can look at that guy and say, yeah, that's a champion. Mm-hmm. That's how a champion carries himself. Because the way he carries himself is childish, it's vindictive, it's very personal, and it's very selfish. And I get that he's done a lot of charity work, and I'm not, you know, attacking that in any way. Mm. But to me, I always liked what...
Tell them it's not a good time.
I know,
we have
right?
important conversations
liked,
we're having.
I always liked what... I always liked what MJ had to say when he was like, look, they said, why don't you talk about politics? And he said, look, people on the right buy shoes too.
Republicans buy sneakers too.
Yeah, like, and you can just say that, and you don't have to make everything political, but that's completely changed. And even beyond politics, just the way he carried himself, right? The way he carried himself, we can look at that and say, yeah, that guy's a role model. Like, you can have a lot of respect for that guy, and he puts the W's on the board at the same time.
I mean, looked at someone like Tom Brady. If you want to see a leader, that is the leader you want to look at. That's someone that makes people better, and that's why you have these dynasties that happen in New England with the Patriots. Bill Belichick, he's a great coach. There's a reason that Mac Jones just jumped in this year, and I can go off on sports about this, but there's a reason they've been successful. There's a reason Tom Brady can switch teams and take the Buccaneers from one of the worst teams in the NFC South to a Super Bowl champion the very next year.
Right, and they said he couldn't do it.
Yeah, they said he couldn't do it. I kind of hoped he wouldn't do it because, randomly enough, I'm an Atlanta Falcons fan. Probably the worst decision I ever made in my life.
Indeed, yes.
Was that, but anytime.
But so the other thing that I really wanted to get into, though, you know, talking about this, you know, you made the jump, you made the plunge, you know, the way Brady made the plunge to Tampa. You know, you're here in politics, but, you know, one thing, and I mentioned from the Philadelphia area, you're from the San Francisco area. What is going on with these cities? Because you were working directly there. Now, I've been out of Philadelphia for about 10 years, so I haven't seen this drastic change as I've seen now. But we just had a situation where a couple of weeks ago here, there was a student murdered on my campus at Temple University, where I went to school. Student murdered there in a carjacking. Just guy tried to take his car. They struggled over it. Ends up dead. Shoots him on the street. Broad daylight, right? Meanwhile, you've got San Francisco, and Schellenberger has a new book out, San Francisco, where it's like, and I appreciate this guy admitting it, where he says, look, we were wrong. Everything we thought. So what, tell me, while you were working there, what were some of these changes that you were seeing? Because think of it, right? On one hand, you're telling me in sports, oh, we're getting so political, we're getting so progressive, we're looking forward. But all around you, it didn't seem like things were, you know, really progressing. It seemed like they were getting worse.
Well, that's what's funny, too, is because the left is always going to say we have this progressive agenda, like it's going to get us to some oasis, some place that's going to make it better. And I remember going to San Francisco when I was a kid. It used to be one of the most beautiful places on earth. You go to the Presidio, you go to Golden Gate Park. It's some of these scenes.
Or like if you watch the movie Vertigo and you see how San Francisco was, I guess that was like probably late 50s. Just gorgeous. Every shot of that, it's Hitchcock, you know, that's what he was always known for, like doing on location stuff, but it's like Southern France, San Francisco.
And literally in San Francisco, it got worse and worse and worse every single year. So for me going there as a kid with my family, just packing into the station wagon, it was beautiful. And then you have politicians there that say, hey, we're going to allow people to shoot up in the streets, crap in the streets, piss in the street, and then we're going to pay people an unbelievable wage to clean that crap up. And then people can talk about San Francisco on and on and on, and then just all the Bay Area, but I lived it. I was working for an esports company, and I did some work with NBC Sports, like I said earlier, and I'm walking through the streets, and I had to pick and choose what streets I was going to go down. And for me, I'm a pretty big dude. I'm 6'5", about 220, and I feel like I can handle myself. But there were certain times where I needed to figure out the best route to get to BART, which was our basically subway system that we had there. And now you have politicians that are saying, hey, we're going to pay you a certain amount of money to not shoot people. And if you
What do you mean pay you money not to shoot people? Who?
That's what they're – so some of these criminals out there, if you're out there, there's crime all across San Francisco. And if you're not going to get into that, they're almost going to be incentivizing people to not shoot people. It's like, here's some money for this, or here's how you can...
Because that works, for example, like when we pay off the Taliban.
Oh, yeah.
It totally works. When you give
people
the money...
People we definitely should be working with.
No, I mean, it's like they fundamentally don't understand human nature. When you give someone money for something, you are going to increase it because they realize that whatever you did... I think I just broke the desk there somehow. whatever they just did got them money. So it's like when I'm with my kid... And one thing I always say to anyone's around him, if he's crying and if he's having like a temper tantrum, like doing something he shouldn't be doing, I say, don't give him a lollipop. Don't give him something nice. Because I don't want to reward negative behavior, right? Positive behavior. He does something great. Lollipop, 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 lollipop all day long. But it's the exact same thing. You can't go to criminals. You can't go, you know, Taliban, obviously they're asking for like 10 million, billion more dollars right now.
Because they know they can.
Because they know they can. And so that's how you put yourself in a type of situation where, and I think that San Francisco's got to this point, Philadelphia's to this point, and we're seeing massive, like the killing is just off the, absolutely off the
charts.
You're
just empowering these people, it's and like then they're the going to rioting and they're looting. And it's right. Like, oh, if you don't steal a certain amount of, you know, a certain dollar amount of items, it's okay. We'll just let you go. So they don't care about small businesses, anything. It's crazy.
We were in San Francisco, my wife and I, we were doing, because I was speaking up in Silicon Valley. There's like this underground conservative liberty group up there. I know, right? And they all work for like Google and Facebook.
It was like China or
right? It was crazy.
Underground
churches in China, yeah. Got a lot of sources out of that meeting, put it that way. But my wife and I both speak Chinese, and we've always heard that, like, San Francisco, Chinatown. Yeah. And we always heard that San Francisco Chinatown is like the biggest, you know, and of course the most famous Chinatown in the whole country. Mm-hmm. So we said, oh, how nice would it be, you know, the night before, because we were staying in San Francisco, and we'll go to Chinatown and we'll find a place where they speak Chinese, and we'll just do the whole meal in China, because, you know, we got to practice a little bit. We're getting a little rusty living in the U.S., doing what we do now. And we go there. We couldn't find, John, we couldn't find a place that was open after 7 p.m. They were all shut down, and all the bakeries, the great food, you know, the Hong Kong pineapple buns and all the rest of it, it was all shut down, and bars across all the windows, bars across all the doors. And this is, you know, what happened to the Stop Asian Hate campaign? This is up, this is Chinatown, right? This is the Asian American center of San Francisco. And
they had to give that 15 seconds of fame.
Yeah.
And that was it. Like, oh, we'll show that we care about it, the Asian, like, people for a hot second. Then they moved on.
I mean, it literally felt like when you watch those Purge movies and then everybody, you know, because like at a certain time, you know, like the crime becomes legal.
Yep.
So you shut down and everybody gets out of Dodge because, you know, if you don't put the bars up, they're coming in. That's exactly what it felt like that night.
Yeah. And anytime, like, I could go off on my story too. I was like, when I was working out there too, like I was Ubering on the side. So like,
okay.
A lot of people know, like, working in the media industry, it's, you got to get, especially in the Bay Area, you got to get about 1,000 different jobs just to live.
Uh-huh.
So when I would go and work out there, I'd sometimes Uber people in, and there's a lot of people visiting San Francisco for the first time. And they're like, is it like this all the time? I'm like, it wasn't. Wow. But it is like this all the time. And there's some people, they're like, I think I just saw a dead guy. Wow. And like, I had my brother and his new wife, congratulations to them. They just escaped Australia. They were living in Australia for a while. And they just had a friend come out with them. And their friend went off to San Francisco first before they were coming out to see us in Phoenix.
It's a world famous city.
It's a world famous city. And everyone's always thought of San Francisco. It's in all these movies. You've heard about it growing up. And it's something that a lot of people want to see, and then they go there, and she was like, oh my gosh, I saw people shooting up in the streets. And then they just dropped it off in this little dispenser area. And then she was just flabbergasted by what happened. Then she decided she's going to go to SoCal, and she went to Venice first. And then she saw a dead person there. And California has just been in shambles. And it's weird for me, someone that was born and raised in California, I had a lot of love for California. It's a beautiful place with a lot of beautiful people. There's a lot of people that really care about this country there, but you have politicians that have just ran it into the ground in a place that
I hear that basically from so many Californians lately. Or like California refugees. Yeah.
And I love being out here in Phoenix, Arizona. It's great. I feel free. And it's awesome having conversations like this, conversations I couldn't have in the Bay Area at all. I really had to be careful about what I said.
So what do you mean by that? So yeah, explain that to me. So all of this is happening around you, right? Mm-hmm. You see the homeless, you see, you know, the defecation on the streets, you see people shooting up, but you're not allowed to talk about it?
No, and I think what I try to do is, which unfortunately a lot of sports media members, when you're trying to work your way up to that network level, because that was my goal. I was thinking I'm either going to be working at, you know, NBC Sports in the Bay Area, or I'm going to find some other opportunity with Fox or something like that. I knew that it was safe to talk about my faith, and I could always explain things from a faith perspective.
Mm.
But I knew it was crazy, Jack. I would see a lot of great conservative tweets. I had to worry about who I followed, because I know people would look at my followers and they'd be like, well, why is he following all these people? I was afraid to like Ben Shapiro tweets because I knew that would come up on people's Twitter feed.
Wow.
And I knew potentially I could be let go without any say whatsoever just because that offended somebody. And we talk about people getting offended. It's on a whole nother level in the Bay Area. It's insane. And I think what I always try to do is I try to love people as best as I humanly can. I try to love people like Jesus. But sometimes the truth is the best love that you can give people.
Even Jesus had to get the whip out sometimes.
Exactly. And for me, I had to try to pick and choose what I was going to say, how I was going to say it, and how I was going to just portray myself online. Because there's a reason I worked in sports. Sports was a outlet away from the craziness of life, politics. It brought people together better than anything else it used to. And I even look at the Olympics. The Olympics have gone a little woke too. What other place can you bring?
Woke. I mean, they've gone full CCP.
Yeah, and it's
literal communist.
And they're saying that it's okay to have genocide, and we're going to give the Olympics to a place like China. And for me, I'm thinking, God, I want to talk about this stuff, but also too, I've worked so hard in my career that I don't want to just let it go. And I know Charlie talks about it all the time. You talk about it. Anytime we have these big events, it's like, you have to be careful about what you say, because sometimes it's not worth it. Sometimes you got to figure out your backup plan, but that's why I'm glad that we have outlets like this and Turning Point USA. You got the Daily Wire, you got a lot of different outlets that allow you to speak freely. And that's something I just couldn't do. And because I built up a huge Bay Area following, I had a lot of people that were just lefties, but they liked sports. So I stuck to sports. Gotcha. So when I moved out here, I basically got canceled for my conservatism.
So was there anyone, or do you know if there's anyone who has like still followed you when they were fans from before that's like carried over at all? Or is it like back to zero?
So, I mean, I never had a really big following. Mm. And I think that's what's funny about, you know, having the opportunity to host stuff like this. I love what I do. And I feel like I'm pretty darn good at what I do. And I've never really dove into like the social media space really heavily, but I did have enough of a following where people knew me. I'd go out anytime after a game or over the weekend in San Jose, and you're like, oh, you're the Sharks guy. Like, it's good to see you, blah, blah, blah.
Cool. That's cool.
And I have people that have stuck with me, and they'll hit me up in my DMs.
That's awesome. And that's really cool.
The kind of conversations I have with not only like Sharks fans or Warriors fans, sports fans in general from the Bay Area, or people I went to church with, or other media members, people hit me up in the DMs, just like you hear all these athletes talk about this, where it's like, oh, like, I'm outspoken, but there's some other guys I know. I won't give up their names, but we're talking about it in DMs. We're texting about it. We're calling about it. And people are afraid. And there's a lot of people that were in positions like I was, and they're trying to work their way up in the sports media sphere, and they're doing a great job. And I'd hate to see people lose and continue to lose jobs just because they love America, just because they stick to American values.
I've had times where, you know, I've had like Hollywood actors or athletes, NASCAR drivers, whatever, they'll follow me or like, I'm like, hey man, just so you know, like maybe you want to take that down because there's going to be some people who get pretty upset. I don't want you to see. And then, you know, every once in a while are like pro wrestlers and sometimes.
I would love to know what the pro wrestling scene looks like.
I mean, it's very similar to what you're saying, right? Yep. You've got some people that are just like full on woke, that are like totally on board because they see it as a means of power and they see it as a means of success in the industry. But then you also have, and so they wield it as a weapon, right? But then you also have people who are like, hey, I just want to go back to the sport the way it was. Mm-hmm. I just want to go back, you know, with wrestling, there's a lot of like character and storylines that people work on that.
People go nuts for that stuff,
you know. They're like, we just want this kind of stuff. We don't want there to be this huge, like, woke overhang kind of, you know, push behind everything. And we don't think that people necessarily like it that much either. But for some reason, everyone feels this need to get it. And there's lots of, you know, there's lots of reasons why there. But for me, you know, I look at Philadelphia and I say, this is where it gets you, right? This is where you end up when you follow these policies down. I mean, my family's from Eastern Europe. My wife was born in the Soviet Union. Like, they tried the equality thing. They really, really tried. And they said, hey, let's make everyone equal and we'll all be the same. It'll be great. And
do you feel like that came from
doesn't work?
Do you feel like that came from a good place? Though I know that's conversations I have with people all the time. They think
you have both. So you have sort of like, you know, different levels of it. And then you've got people who will say, and like Schellenberger talks about this in his new book, where he's talking about San Francisco, but he really is kind of talking about this progressive equality-ism at the same time, where he says, look, you have a lot of people that just want to help others. And they think it's better if you do this, you give more money, you spend more, you make more programs. That's good. That's what people need. But then you've also got people who cynically say, oh, well, I can just say these things and then I can be in charge and then I can have power and then I can get more power and accumulate that to myself. And then they go all the way up with it. So I think by and large, and I'm sure there's people on the right who'd be like, no, Jack, like, no. I really do think that. I really do think there's a lot of well-meaning people that fall into that. You see this a lot with you and I've talked about before, progressive Christianity, where people say it's just, you just, you know, it's mercy, 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 mercy. And it's like, Yes, of course, there's mercy, but there's also judgment first,
yeah,
right? And you need both, or else it's like like Christianity is not this blanket that you can just wrap yourself in, right? Mm-hmm. It's you are going to be called to account. And that's number one.
Yep.
And then number two is if you truly repent, right? And you truly make your repentance, you're actually being penitent for the sins that you have committed, then you can get the mercy. But it's, and like, you know, it's the whole thing. There's no sin that's so big, God can't forgive it. But at the same time, you have to come to him. It's not the other way around.
Yeah. And then something that a lot of people,
it's not like, it's like a free check. It's like a blank check to just, oh, do whatever, you know?
Yeah. And that's not biblical at all. A lot of people,
not even,
you know what it is? It's the world telling Christians and people of faith, you know, what love is, what truth is, and what mercy is. It's wrong. And,
I'm the same way with my kid, right? I love my son. I would do anything for my son. I would take a bullet for my son, right? You, like, don't even have to think about it.
Yeah.
But if my son is doing something that he shouldn't be doing, well, then I'm going to be stern with him. And I'm going to say, hey, you know, you can't do that. Or, hey, you know, that's too much, you know, iPad time. Or you have to share this with your brother. Yep. You know, that doesn't mean you just let them walk all over you. No, of course not.
And that's where a lot of people need to get back to.
Because that's formation.
Exactly. And that's where, I mean, you as a father, I don't know what it's like to be a father, but I know with
you'd
my
be a good dad.
I can't wait to be a good dad. And I can't wait to instill Christian principles and values into my kids. Because, you know, for sure, the school system's not going to give it to you right now. The world's definitely not going to give it to you. But a lot of people have just fallen prey to the world telling them about, really, especially to over the pandemic, like, oh, if you really loved your neighbor, you'd wear a mask. And then that turned into, if you really love your neighbor, you'll get the vaccine. And then you have right, all these right. people trying to tell you what your faith is. And then also, too, you have a lot of pastors and churches that dove into a lot of this woke BS, and they started telling their congregation that. They're not
so
shepherding
my church,
their flock well.
We actually had something a couple of weeks ago where they announced they're going to be holding a new, like, racial justice committee. They said they were going to have a racial justice committee, or racial, and we're going to talk about racial issues and all this. And I remember I see this in the booklet, and I turn to my wife, and I'm like, sweetheart, and we look around, Tanya's looking around, I said, look around the church right now. And I'm like, you could see every race under the sun is here under this roof to praise Christ the King together. I'm like, this is racial justice.
Exactly.
This is equality under God. And yet, you guys holding committees like this, telling you that there's a problem, no, you're actually creating a problem because we already have it right here. I got the cross. What? I don't need anything else beyond that. And so you guys telling me that we do need something beyond that is actually creating division where there wasn't any to begin with.
And if you want to talk about actual social justice, just get into the word, because there's too many pastors right now that are trying to shepherd a flock, and they're telling them, like, all right, so here's the world, and I'll tell you what's going on there, and then I'll sprinkle in a little Bible, and then we're going to get into worldly stuff. Where it's like, is that actually going to be building
people
up?
I think there's so much progressive Christianity where they're using, essentially, it's left-wing activists using the, you know, a paper shield of a church as a way to have basically a tax-free status to be able to conduct their left-wing activism, right? It's a tax shelter for them, because you can tell that they, I mean, I see this online, like when I look at the, you know, Libs of TikTok covers this a lot, you know, some of these woke pastors, and you're like, this isn't religion, right? This is activism. This is left-wing activism. And then every once in a while, you might mention the word Jesus.
And then you got a lot of people. If people haven't watched American Gospel, that is a fantastic documentary, especially talking
about. I haven't
seen
that. What is that?
It's all about the prosperity gospel.
Oh,
and it calls people out. And Kasti Hinn, the nephew of Benny Hinn.
Okay.
Like, there's a lot of those healing pastors out there that all they did was just, they'd fly around in their private jets. You got Kenneth Copeland's, and then you got Joel Osteen a while back. You got a plumber that's finding cash in the walls.
Mm-hmm.
These guys.
And he thanked him. Did you hear that? I remember that was the next part.
We're looking for that.
It's a good move. That's a good move. Oh, we were looking for that money. Don't ask too many, clear your mind and don't ask too many questions, investigators, about who put the money behind the wall. It's God wanted, you know, actually, I think that God wanted that money to be behind that wall of that bathroom, and that's why it was there. Gosh darn it.
Yeah, he sounds a lot more like Hochul from New York than Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
when you say something like that.
What's going on with that? Mm-hmm. Like, where's the sackcloth? you know what I mean? Right. Where's the, you know, dispossess yourself of all your you know, your worldly possessions and come and follow me, right? That's,
and then
I don't know, man. Like, I don't know how you can read the gospel and come away with that that kind of look at it.
Because the problem is people aren't reading the gospel.
Yeah.
They aren't.
Exactly.
They want just everything in 140 characters. I've always said that. That they just want everything given to them, and they're going to take that with face value. They're going to like a little Bible verse here and there, and that's all. That's
Amen.
All we're good.
Wow. So we covered, look at that. We covered all of this, and we'll have to have you on again for another one of these. We've got San Francisco. We've got wokeness in sports. We've got wokeness in the churches, and really, I do think we need a better name for it. But I think we're starting now to become better to understand what this cultural rot is. But I do like the fact that you came to it from the perspective of, I think it's people who mean well, but they've been misled.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we have to stop getting so riled up about stuff, because the left, all they're going to do is constantly just push this emotional aspect, and you don't win emotional arguments. We have to get down to logic. I don't think I really subscribe to the facts don't care about your feelings completely, because there is feelings involved, and I think we have to ask questions like, maybe are some people doing this out of the goodness of their hearts? Because I've known a lot of good Christians that decided they're going to stay in their homes, and they're going to follow these "quote unquote guidelines" and everything, and I think a
Jerry
lot of those.
Jerry Spence, the great defense lawyer. I'm paraphrasing him, but he said, "You know, evidence doesn't win cases; narratives win cases."
Mm-hmm.
Narratives,
exactly. And I think that's why I'm glad we're able to have these conversations.
The fall
of
San Francisco, the fall of sports, the fall of Western Christianity. Once you describe it that way, boom, people. Tell people where they can follow you, where they can, you know, where you hang your hat on social media wise.
You guys can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny Root, JONNY_. And that's where you can follow me. Post a lot of great content from what we're doing with TPUSA Live, Breakaway, and I'm always open and honest about my thoughts. Been shadow banned a little bit, been trying to figure that out, but it's been great meeting more conservatives, having conversations like this, and I hope to have some more.
Very cool. And as I always say, take it away, John.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, man.